You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Chris McFeely, Chris Triplett, and Brian Kilby.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined today by Chris Triplett and Chris McFeely. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hey.
So, here we are on this fine week. Lots of comics to talk about. Little bit of news to talk about, so we'll talk about that here in just a second. Big week for comics, so very exciting stuff. Batman's back. Flash came out again. Who knows? So we'll get into all that. But first, let's talk just a little bit of news. One item, we kind of teased this last week, or at least we've got the tease for it last week. There was mention of two characters that are supposed to die within the comic universe, one of them being Superman and the other being Spider-Man. I'm a little sad because in all of the discussion that we had last week talking about in particular the death of Spider-Man because Big Time just came out and everything, we sort of missed the fact that it may be Ultimate Spider-Man, which it is Ultimate Spider-Man.
I like to think that that's because we're smart enough to believe that the Ultimate Universe wouldn't have done something so hokey.
We think too highly of it or not highly enough?
Oh, well, this is... Well, I'll tell you what this is. I think this is pretty obviously an attempt by Marvel to get people paying attention to the Ultimate Universe again. Because as much as we sit here and, well, we haven't done it recently, I grant you, but we have done it in the past, as much as we've sat and talked about the feelings of Jeff Loeb as a human being, and as much as fandoms joke about how things ruin things forever, there's no real getting around the fact that Jeff Loeb and Ultimatum really did sort of ruin the Ultimate Universe forever, because the sales have been down on it ever since it happened. The people actively use that series as a jumping off point, and the Ultimate imprint is just really flagging badly, you know, and I can't look at this as anything other than an attempt to get people to pay some attention to it again and hopefully drum up some sales. I mean, it's got Miller and Bendis working on it, and that's pretty obviously all it is. And I can't see anything coming of it either.
Hmm. Yeah, I have to say I was a little underwhelmed when I heard it, because...
Well, I was pretty underwhelmed when I heard about the idea of just Spider-Man dying anyway. It doesn't matter if it was Ultimate or Amazing.
Well, that's the thing, though. That's sort of like the overwhelming reaction that I've seen everywhere is that, and it speaks to the attitude everyone has about the Ultimate Universe now, is that they hear that news, and, I mean, there's some people who have reacted, and it's like, oh, no, not the Ultimate Universe, that's the only one I read. But then there have been, most people seem to have gone, oh, thank goodness, like it doesn't matter then.
Yeah.
Because that is the attitude that the Ultimate Universe is treated with at the minute. Which is... Perhaps, well, I suppose you could argue, which is perhaps a reason that they need to try and do something with it. But schlocky attempts at gimmicks have rarely worked well for the Ultimate Universe.
Mm.
Ultimate,
yeah,
and that's it.
Yeah. See, they need to do some time traveling stuff. You know, like Return of Bruce Wayne.
Right. They need to do the ultra gimmicky stuff. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. I mean, wouldn't be the first time you see.
Right.
Bendis seems to be trying hard to grow the beard, as they say, of the Ultimate Universe, because, you know, we've seen him returning to old plot ideas, you know, old seed plots that he'd seeded in his older works like Ultimate Power and Ultimate, what's that other one, Ultimate Origins, with the Watchers and Rick Jones and Ben Grimm mutating in Ultimate Spider-Man and in his Ultimate Mystery Enemy Doom trilogy that he's doing in a minute. So he seems to have, you know, a vision as for where he wants this thing to go. And I'm just wondering how much of what we're about to be subjected to is going to fit in with that.
So, on to other things that are of interest.
Yeah, so that's happening in February.
Yeah, really. And so we'll hold our breath until we get to that exciting moment. So, this week we were blessed with the first teaser trailer for The Green Lantern.
I wasn't that teasery. There was a lot of stuff in there.
It was. It was a really big trailer, I thought, for being... For being a teaser, what did you guys think?
I like the look of it.
Eh.
I think I'm with Triplett.
I mean, it was okay, but I don't know. I mean, look, well, maybe it's I'm tired of comic book movies. Maybe we've gotten so many of them that it's like, well, it's another one, you know. What's the new about it?
I mean, there wasn't a lot of stuff in there that would thrill the average viewer. I mean, as Rick Gear has just said in the chat window, Tomar Ray for the win. It was nice looking at the trailer and seeing Tomar Ray and Kilowog, and particularly Sinestro.
God, yeah. Kilowog and Sinestro was, like, awesome, but still, other than that, I'm just kind of like, yeah.
I have to say that as far as the other than the stuff that looks to be on OWA, it sort of felt like a fan-made trailer. Like, somebody had taken the comic book movies over the last, like, 10 years or so, recut them, and then made this trailer. Because I felt like I've seen these elements before.
Yeah, it was very Iron Man-y in the early moments.
Mm-hmm.
Wakes up in a bed with a nameless blonde, runs off to do something important.
Yeah, that's what they want it to be. They want it to be DC Iron Man, which makes perfect sense.
That is a very... They want this to be their Iron Man.
From the start from seeing that.
But you're right there.
I think it's too spacey, though. I mean, I think it seems like there's going to be too much of a sci-fi element to it. Too much space
Green Lantern, as comic readers, like, we're well associated with the concept of the Green Lantern these days. But the Green Lantern is not an easy sell to the average audience.
You know,
and I think they're just trying to get as many of the elements out of the way and ingrained into people's minds as they can at first. I mean, really, if you're approaching this from a sensible storytelling point of view, and you could look at it as how you're going to have future movies to explore your universe in. I mean, really, as far as simply telling the best story goes, the best way to do it probably would be to leave him on Earth for the first film.
You know, and I think if this movie fails, it's going to be on Geoff Johns. And don't get me wrong, I love Geoff Johns. But he did not have the hubris to say, you know what, Secret Origins is maybe not the most palatable version of Green Lantern's origin for a wider audience. Why not go with, like, Emerald Dawn?
It's not like this is Secret Origins. It's not like Atrocitus and Black Hound. They're stomping around in it.
Well, but it has a lot of those elements. Well, not necessarily maybe Secret Origins, but more of like the First Flight. It seems to have a lot in common.
Yeah, okay, it can definitely be a bit more comparable to that. I mean, but then Emerald Dawn has him going off to Oa as well. I mean, I still think that Hector Hammond is the best choice for the first movie villain.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, although it should have included Larfleeze. I would agree.
All in good time.
Yeah, save that for the third movie.
Right. There you go. Once we get the...
I mean, the CGI seems a little rough in it, but, you know, give that the benefit of the doubt when the thing is finished.
It doesn't feel when I first saw, like, the trailer for Iron Man, and we saw, like, the CG for the suit and everything, it kind of, like, blew me away. But this, I'm just kind of like, he's got CG clothes on, and it looks funny. The CG costume
has taken it a bit far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not real neat.
See, it kind of works for Iron Man, because basically he looks like a robot.
Right.
But, when you put a man in that, it just doesn't look right. Something's off about it.
I think they should have widened his eyes out a little bit more. I think having that much of his actual eye visible, even with the white, I don't know. It tripped me out a little bit. I don't know.
But I think you should probably go the whole way with it.
But, you know, I don't want to say, you know, come down on it and say, oh, okay, I'm not going to see this. God, yes, I'm going to see this.
Oh, hell yeah, I'm going to go see this.
I'm going to see this day one. Hell, I'll probably be seeing this midnight showing.
My concern is that... My concern is that I want this film to be a financial success for DC. I want them to get back in the game.
And I love Green Lantern, so I want it to be a good Green Lantern movie.
Absolutely. I want 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 of these movies. But if it's not a financial success initially, they're not going to go for it. And that's why I'm concerned, is because I am concerned about this film being acceptable to a wider audience. And, I mean, obviously there's no way to tell now. We're not going to be able to resolve that now. But I didn't see anything in the trailer that made me think, you know, we kind of discussed this before, I think, and I didn't see anything in the trailer that made me, that changed my mind, that made me think that my initial concerns are unfounded.
If I'm being honest, I can't actually rely on myself to form a proper opinion about this just yet. Purely because I can't really be bothered thinking about other superhero movies until Thor gets out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This coming summer is so freaking huge. I mean,
where's our official Thor trailer, for God's sakes? I want that.
But I am buckling under the weight of summer 2011 already. My pocketbook is just screaming already for mercy.
I can't even think about Captain America. Or you know, people ask me, what do you think about this whole Avengers movie? And I'm like,
that's
2 years' time. Thor comes out first.
And we got like an X-Men movie coming too, don't we? I mean, isn't that still coming?
Yeah, but wow.
Oh, my God. It's like packed full of junk.
No. So,
who even cares about that X-Men movie that's coming out at this point?
First Class now. That should be a series. That should be like...
I can't understand that, though. I mean, apparently it's set in the 60s.
That's the only interest I have in it, is that it's set in the 60s.
ABC should do that as a series and put it on to compete with, like, any of the CW comic stuff. Like, that is a teen angst weekly drama waiting to be.
I wouldn't watch that.
No, but lots of people would.
This is true. Smallville is evidence of that.
Exactly.
Yeah, when Smallville ends, they need to have X-Men First Class take its time slot.
No, well, they won't, because it's a competing company, right? That's what I'm saying. It's got to go on, like, ABC, because that's the other, you know, that's, like, Disney's channel or whatever. Yeah. So
I don't know. I don't understand the thought process behind it. Is it just not, are they just not bothering to follow up the other X-Men movies then, or what? Like,
I
don't get it.
I don't know. I think they got to a point where they couldn't.
But they can't get the actors back, right? They can't afford.
Well, they are doing some
of those guys.
I thought they're doing another X-Men Origins Wolverine movie.
They're doing another Wolverine.
Just
That's just Wolverine. It's not like getting Patrick Stewart and Halle Berry and God knows who else. What's his name? Magneto. Ian McKellen. They can't get all those guys back. It's too much money. So let's recast them and do a prequel. Which is
they announced this week, though, that Darren Aronofsky is doing the second Wolverine movie, and it's not going to follow on from Wolverine Origins.
It's sounding so much better now than originally.
I'm tired of all this talk of reboots. You know, talk about how everybody should do. Oh, you know, after the third Transformers movie, they should totally do a reboot. I mean, what happened to trying to build a franchise? Why is everybody so quick to jump on the reboot bandwagon these days? And just,
but, you know, it's okay to reboot.
Wait a little while before you reboot a thing.
No, it's okay to reboot Wolverine, because have you seen Wolverine? It needs reboot.
They did kind of go a little far in some places.
Yeah.
So, but then Deadpool's going to be coming out too. I mean, there's some other stuff, but. Yeah, I agree. The reboots thing is a little much. So
yeah.
Anyway, we've got comics.
Oh! Other news. What? Quick thing.
Okay.
Dennis Leary is going to be in the Spider-Man reboot.
That's great. So,
Do we know as who yet? Do we have any theory?
Yeah, Captain Stacy.
Oh, I did read that. Yeah.
I just wanted to mention it. We don't have to talk about it.
If you haven't seen it, see The Ref. That's an excellent movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if I didn't mention it before, and I say that because I know I didn't, this week it is Fanboy versus Batman The Return. So that is going to be our big capper. Batman's finally back. We We have a whole slew of Batman stuff that came out. So what are we talking about?
It was a pretty bat heavy week. I mean, aside from the stuff, you know, the stuff we are going to talk about, there's a bunch of bat stuff that we're not going to talk about as well.
No.
Already, he was everywhere.
Although, I'm sure I think there's three issues in front of me that are things we're discussing that relate to Batman. So, yeah, so good stuff. Okay, so, I guess, Triplett, we'll go. You're our starter. You're like our, in our pitching game that is this show, you get to open up.
Well, awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. I read basically what you guys read. So it all comes down to, what do you guys feel passionate about? I mean, what do you guys want to talk about? You guys...
Why don't you take a... I know you want to talk Avengers, so why don't you talk Avengers?
Well, I can talk Avengers. I don't know if I want to talk Avengers, but I can. Avengers number 7. Yeah. Avengers number 7 is the issue with Red Hulk. And that's about it. I mean, what happens in this issue? There's like, I read it, but like, who's this guy? There's like this dude at the beginning, and he's collecting Infinity Gems.
Yeah.
And I mean, should I know who this guy is? I can't.
It's the Hood.
Oh, it's the Hood. Okay, well that's why I don't know who he is. Okay. He's not wearing a hood in it.
Well.
So for the most of the issue, he's basically just collecting Infinity Gems. They go back to the stuff with Wonder Man, but they don't really do anything with it. It's like I was telling JD before the show, the conversation that Iron Man and Thor has with Wonder Man, where they basically ask him, you say, why are you being a dick? He kind of responds, because I can be a dick, for the most part.
Like, that's an answer.
But I mean, it does seem there's something else going on with him.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I didn't get anything more out of it than what we'd previously had. I mean, it's nice that they went back to it, but still, I don't know.
Well, I actually quite enjoyed this, to be honest. Well, I mean, first of all, it goes back to the plot left over from New Avengers, the Illuminati miniseries, where we saw that the Illuminati each had one of the Infinity Gems after, I don't remember what they got them after, but they gathered them up and they've kept one each. So this is going back to this, you know, saying there before about Bendis revisiting plot threads. I mean, that's
and see, this is probably why I didn't care for the book, because, you know, I've not read any of that.
Oh, well, I just thought, Bendis established quite a while back that the Illuminati have the Infinity Gems, so the Hood is going around picking them up, and he gets the power gem. No, he gets the Reality Gem from where Black Bolt hid it in the remains of Athlon, and he gets the power gem from the Baxter Building, and he proceeds to go and beat Seven Shades out of the Red Hulk, and I just can't deny that that's remarkably cathartic and enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, but
whenever the Red Hulk joins the Avengers and then he's stomping through them on the cover, and his role in this issue involves getting beat to paste, and I just can't be like that. That's not a bad thing as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, but if he does wind up just joining the Avengers, it doesn't matter, because that still sucks. Because
I'm not sure if he will actually join them now after the way they do. And I enjoyed revisiting Wonder Man and the idea that he's actually not well. His body seems to be breaking down, or his ionic energy is not holding itself together properly anymore. So that's why he's losing it mentally.
He does make a point that, you know, the Avengers shouldn't exist because, you know, he wants to stop other Avengers from dying, basically, you know. I didn't mention that, but the way he just came off as like a dick, you know.
He really does. What is the one? Where's the quote? Just the other day when you attacked us, you destroyed a time machine that we were using to reverse it. And Wonder Man interrupts Simon and says, "It's always something." And then Simon says, "Almost helped to break the world, Simon." And Simon says, "And yet here we are."
Yeah,
because they went off, built the time machine, and fixed it. You dick.
Yeah.
That would not have fixed itself if they hadn't done something. You big purple dick. So there's obviously something wrong with Wonder Man, though. And I kind of have to at least respect the fact that there's some kind of subplot being threaded throughout this comic, but it's still... You remember when comics had subplots?
Yeah. Subplots? What's that?
Bendis has never quite mastered the subplot. But that's because he still very much writes the self-contained arc. And so anything that resembles a subplot that comes out of his rather impresses me. But, you know, we went 4 issues without seeing it revisited again, and that's not how you build a subplot like that properly. I don't know, I basically just tend to judge all Avengers against Kurt Busiek's Avengers, and he was always threading stuff around in it. I've been thinking a lot about Busiek's Avengers.
It's because Busiek's Avengers was awesome. That's why you're judging it.
Yeah. I don't know why, but I have been thinking a lot about Busiek's Avengers lately. I don't know, I guess it must just be this return to the more straightforward heroic times. That's just got me thinking about it. And I see they're bringing out paperback collections of Busiek's Avengers very soon, starting with the first 10 issues or something. So cool. I would recommend everybody read that. But God, no, yes. I mean, I think I must have enjoyed this a fair bit more than you did, Triplett. Maybe by virtue of the fact that it was actually quite punchy as well, no pun intended.
Yeah, I didn't hate the book. It's just that... You know, well, it was a book. It was a comic. There's something going on in it, but do I really care about it? You know, it's the problem.
The plot clipped along rightly.
Red Hulk. I think if Red Hulk wasn't in the book, you know, maybe I would have been a little bit more interested in it. I think he just soured the whole experience from the beginning. You know, seeing him on that cover. God, I hate that cover.
Yeah, well, I can definitely see that, but I was quite pleased to see that his role in the comic involved him getting punched. You know, basically with Jeff Parker seemingly working over now that he's taken over the pages of Hulk to touch upon all of the really retarded fight. Oh, there's that word again. All of that stupid, stupid stuff that Jeff Loeb had the Red Hulk doing in the earliest issues, like picking up Thor's hammer and punching the Watcher. He is literally he seems to be going down a checklist and bringing each of those characters back so that they can mallet the Red Hulk and teach him what's for.
Fantastic.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the Watcher nearly had the Red Hulk sucked into a black hole without even moving in the last issue of the Hulk. And it's like, yeah, that's about right. Yeah, that's how that should have gone. And then he couldn't pick up the hammer. I mean, the excuse for him picking up the hammer back when was because they were outside of Earth's gravity, so he could pick it up like that. But he couldn't in this issue, and Thor proceeded to beat his face in with it. And, you know, nobody seems to really adopt quite such a fanboyish approach to the Red Hulk as Jeff Loeb does. And, you know, I mean, Bendis has brought him in and had the first thing be done to him, get beat purple. So more of that will do quite nicely for me.
Yes, please.
Oh.
But yeah, I mean, it was fine. I mean, there was really nothing wrong with the book. It's just, I guess my opinion of the comic. I just didn't care that much about it. But
I guess I enjoyed it more than you did.
Yeah. But well, let's see what else we got this week. I read Flash. You want me to talk about it now or?
Yeah, go sure. Flash.
Whatever.
Flash is. The total opposite. I freaking love this comic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
oh, my God. I mean, this is it's just a wild story. I mean, I don't even know where to start. I mean, it's continuing. It's been like a while since we got an issue of Flash. It's been, what, like couple of months? It's kind of late, isn't it?
There's an obvious joke in that, but everybody else has made it, so we don't need to.
Yeah. Flash is late yet again. I think we got it last month, but I think the break between the month prior to that and last was pretty long.
It just seems like Flash is like so awesome with each issue that it always seems like a really long time since the last issue. So it makes me think it's been like 3 months or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's
what
it is.
Well, it is longer than normal anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's well, it pretty much left off from the end of the last issue where Shoot, what are they called? The Renegades. Yeah, they got Flash, and they've took him to the future, and he's, you know, in front of the judge, and the judge is, you know, about to, you know, sentence him or do something, you know, and it's pretty much where we left off from the last issue. We find out that it's actually our big villain is the Top, the Renegade version of the Top.
And we get a half page recapping the plot of the previous issue in case we forgot. Whatever happened to that? Hey, whatever happened to that?
Yeah. And awesome,
I couldn't quite remember when I was reading the first page. It was like, it's been a while. I remember the mirror. And I remember he was lying. But what was the... Oh, a recap, Brandon.
And awesome little art too, like showing, like, you know, the Flash, the side of his head, and then like seeing like the rogues above him, and the encase the Flash returns break glass, and the glass breaking, and all the stuff, the Mirror Mistress, it's just cool looking, you know, that image. It's like on the second page.
Mm-hmm,
it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but what do you guys think? What did you think about this book? Let me know your opinions.
I mean, I, you know, I'm with you. I loved it a lot. I liked the idea that Barry was just kind of hanging out to see what would happen, because there was no way that the bonds they had on him would actually hold him. You know, that he was just kind of trying to wait it out and see what was going on before he actually broke loose and did something. I like the idea that there's more going on than even the actual story. There's some deeper things that are going on with the Flash. And the story is subplots. It's crazy. Because, and I think the really great thing is that I think Johns is, and we'll have to talk about it in a minute, but I think Johns is tying some of the things that's happening into this, into what's going on in Green Lantern. Yeah. I mean, and like I said, I like where it ends, where, you know, as far as Flash wins, but he's not sure that he really did. It's like there's still that, the moment of doubt, and I think that's, which, again, that kind of leads into some other things. But there's obviously larger things going on as far as with the rogues. We get an image of Wonder Woman even in here with the... like a split down the middle with the costume, the Renegades from the future.
Yeah, it ties in with, you know, Straczynski's story. Mm-hmm. Kind of shows that they really, because we even see, like, you know, Return of Bruce Wayne stuff. We see Action Comics where Lex Luthor's meeting Death. We see Brightest Day. I mean, mm-hmm. they acknowledge that, hey, something's wrong here. Time is not the way it should be. This is not, our records have been tampered with, I think is what they say.
Yeah, I think this is probably just the craftiness of Johns, again, taking some separate things that probably weren't conceived as having anything to do with one another and building a story out of them, which is when Johns sometimes does his best work. If you look at something like Green Lantern Rebirth is a great example of that.
And it's an issue that's basically just a big fight. I mean, once he...
Yeah, or a chase
he,
even, or a fight.
Yeah, well, once he figures out, you know, what's, you know, going on, you know, in the future, he, you know, jumps on those time... board things and goes back and stops the Top from, you know, Silence and shoot, what's her name, what's his
Iris.
Wife's name, Iris. Yeah, and then it, like you said, it's like it's basically just a either a chase sequence or a little bit of a fight. You know, the fight's over as soon as, you know, Flash gets to him for the most part, because he does the thing where he says, oh, you can't touch me. And it says, and he says, in that friction-proof suit, you're right, I can't touch you, but I can reverse your speed from inside out and shift you from drive to reverse on half the speed of light. And he just, like, it's like his suit explodes from the inside out or something.
Yeah.
That's awesome. It's, like, over before the fight even starts, because, you know, he's freaking Barry Allen. You know?
Yep. What is this motorcycle figure at the end?
Yeah,
that's what you call a teaser.
That's interesting. I like that. Because it seems to be using, like, even the motorcycle seems to be using the Speed Force.
But is it, well, what I was going to say is, you know, the guy, the, he was like one of the Flashes from the future. He was from the Mark Wade stuff. Is this that guy?
I don't know. I did think of him, but I couldn't tell you. We had this discussion once.
Was his
ago
name
as well,
John?
I went,
was it John something? I can't remember his
name.
He was the one that traveled back when Wally was doing something back when, you know, he was the Flash, and he stayed with Wally's wife for a while, and he was the Flash of our era. And then, you know, when Wally came back, I guess then he left. I was thinking that that's him because I was for some reason thinking that his suit was similar to that suit, like the blue and everything and the white. But I don't know. I may be totally off base here. I probably am. This is probably like a whole new character or something.
You wouldn't know with Geoff Johns, isn't he? Yeah. But this is, of course, just teasing for Flashpoint next year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, yeah. You know, overall, just a great book. I mean, you can't go wrong with Flash.
No, it's just it is and remains what we've always said about it. It's a highly entertaining, vaguely Silver Age-y in terms of morals, in terms of action, in terms of the types of story they're trying to tell, but without the inherent hokiness from that sort of era. It's gentle without being disposable.
I do like the thing about, like, you know, the Renegade's opinion of the Flash, where, you know, they're like, you know, I respect what you do, but I'm also disappointed in you. And he says, because you have the power to travel in time, but you don't even try to fix it. He says, at least we are. And then they're like, they're left. You know, they're still kind of like this dangling plot line where, you know, they're probably going to be back. And they're probably going to be running into this whole Flashpoint thing. I just think it makes those characters more interesting.
Does anybody else think that we know who's under that hood? You know?
Or that it'll be a new character? I don't know.
We will know who's under the judge's hood.
I was thinking
under the judge's hood, yeah.
I was thinking for some reason we were going to find out in this issue. When the last issue ended and we saw like the dude with the hood, I was thinking, why has he got a hood over his head? Are we going to find that out in the next issue? And we didn't. And I was
probably
expecting
turn out to be Barry or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah,
I was
really.
For some reason I was expecting it to be Reverse Flash.
Yeah, that was
Professor Zoom. Yeah, like he take the hood off and he's like, "I got you now, Barry," or something.
They keep mentioning that. They do keep mentioning him. So
yeah, they keep bringing. I mean, it is the Reverse Task Flash, Reverse Flash Task Force.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, good book. Good book. I liked it
definitely.
A lot. What else we got? I mean, the only other stuff I've got is Green Lantern, Batman Return, Batman Inc., and Brightest Day.
So, what else do you have, McFeely?
I just got Brightest Day and Osborne.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and take Brightest Day and Osborne, and then I'll finish out with Inc. and GL.
I also have Tiny Titans, but I don't have too much to say about that this week. The entire hook of this month's Tiny Titans is the limited art style of Tiny Titans means that Zatara and Superboy wind up looking identical, and the plot is hung on that, in which the characters are substituted for one another. You know, Supergirl horses Zatara off to the... can't figure out what's wrong with Superboy and why he keeps claiming he's not Superboy. So she takes him off to the Fortress of Solitude and asks Jor-El for a bit of assistance in figuring it out. Do you have heat vision?
No, sir.
Can you fly?
No, sir.
Ice breath?
No, sir.
This isn't Superboy.
Awesome.
Indeed. Anyway, Brightest Day. Brightest Day. This issue of Brightest Day is all about Dead Man. Or Alive Man.
Mm-hmm.
I like Alive Man.
For most of this issue, he is Dead Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In which, after coming to the conclusion last issue that Batman, just recently returned himself, might be the champion that the White Ring is waiting for, he goes out, busts up a little operation of Mr. Freeze's to find Batman, and tries to get him to take the White Ring. The ring shoots off, goes on Batman's hand. We get another action figure that DC can sell in a few months' time with White Lantern Batman.
Yeah.
And then one of Mr. Freeze's surviving goons shoots Dead Man.
Alive Man.
Alive Man, yes. All right. Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And he keels over and we get a little kaleidoscopic view of his life from childhood. And he was a bit of a dick when he was younger.
He was
a bit of a dick his whole life. What are you talking about?
Yeah. I guess I haven't read enough Dead Man stuff. I know.
No, I mean, like, this life. As far as like Dead Man the character, I'm not too sure. Because again, that's a character I'm not too familiar with. But his whole life, it seems like he was a dick. A dick as a kid.
Yeah.
dick when he was in school, looks like, and then he was
major,
a dick at the circus, you know?
It just retells these few moments where Boston realizes that he was just basically a dick to everybody, and then he gets shot and died. but he's really he realizes, you know, how badly he wants to live, and the ring is just sort of basically being a bit of a dick in this issue by allowing him to feel this. And the point is basically that he's trying to pass the burden off to Batman. Whenever his job is to simply live his life and the champion will come to him. And also then he and Dawn start macking on each other.
Which is like, what? Yeah,
Dove, right?
Dawn's her name. But yeah,
oh, Dawn's her name. Oops, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, like, is anybody else thinking that maybe it's supposed to be Dove?
Well, no, I think that's overly obvious.
Yeah, that's too obvious.
Because they keep, like, he keeps trying to find out who – he keeps going to places looking for this person, and then she's, like, always with him. I don't know. Maybe it is too obvious, but I don't know. I don't know. The ender of this issue sort of
maybe – it's going to be their love child.
Yeah, there you go.
I have to say, though, stepping back for just a second, I like the white light. I think it has a really interesting character. Because this is not the first time that the white light has sort of been, look,
dickish.
You're being a bitch. Shut up. Take what I give you. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I like that. It's like, it's something.
It's all real night in this one. You chose poorly.
But this last page is great. One, because
last page is the most interesting bit of it.
I should have expected the whole Dove Boston thing, and I don't know why I didn't. But the very bottom is when Batman says, "We need to talk about Maxwell Lord." It's like,
dun dun dun.
Yes. Interesting.
Of course, Batman wasn't in this time period whenever Max did his mind wipe. So,
yep. Yeah.
So hard to tell if he remembers because of that, or if the ring's giving him his memory of it back somehow.
The white
light. Yeah, I was kind of thinking the white light maybe, you know, gave him his memory. But then again, you're right. He wasn't here when he did the mind wipe, so maybe it didn't affect him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And maybe that's one of the, you know, maybe that was, a side effect of having the ring is that that's opened that up. So, man, that could be good stuff.
So is this line at the end supposed to be the thing that's supposed to make me want to go buy, was it Lost Generation?
You need to be reading that anyway, dude.
I imagine that that's probably where this will come back up, all right?
Yeah. But, I'm serious. It is a good series. People need to be reading that.
I feel bad about not getting on it from the start.
Yeah, I wanted to get it, but it's like I had to get one or the other, and I figured,
Jeff
Johns is doing Brightest Day, and I want to get it, so I figured I'd get that one. So there you go.
I think most people did that, to be honest.
Yep, which is too bad, because Gen Lost.
I sell three times as many Brightest Days as I do Generation Lost.
I will totally read Generation Lost, like, I'm probably later, like when they collect it to a trade. Yeah. But now it's just like, I can't. It's just an extra book. Nah. I get enough books as it is. I don't need another book.
Nah. I love this. I'm just leafing through the issue right now, the bit where Deadman helps Batman take down Mr. Freeze and his goons, and he says to him, "What are you doing here, Deadman?" And the Deadman replies, "We've only met when I was an invisible ghost talking through other people. How'd you know it was me?"
I'm Batman.
Oh, whenever you can get that joke done just right, it always makes me laugh.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, so not a heck of a lot to say there. It is mostly about Deadman's history, and it's the last page where all the exciting stuff
happens. We're getting a lot of issues now where it's focusing on one of the guys now. Instead, before, where it was kind of breaking it up, now we're getting like one issue like per guy now, it seems like.
Well, it's also if that was in the original plan, or if that's something that they've started to do later now.
Well, it was also the opportunity to do a White Lantern version of Batman, so...
Yeah,
I'm sure that wasn't a minor piece of the, considering it had a full page, you know, spread for.
Do you guys get or have you seen over there the DC Classic figurine collection?
The DC Classic figures, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
the not the action figures, no, the little lead painted figurines that come with the magazines.
I don't get those.
That's a British thing. I'm pretty sure it's available in America somewhere, but I don't know how widespread it is. But it's a pretty widespread British magazine collection. It's fortnightly, and every issue comes with a painted lead figurine. But they have a series from Marvel, and they have a series for DC. But they've just announced that they're going to be doing a Blackest Night sub series as well.
Mm.
So you know, when I say action figure, I'm not really making a joke. Because it's not like there aren't a million potential figurines that they could make for a Blackest Night series, mm-hmm. with all the different members of the Corps and all the characters who get deputized into the Corps and all the Black Lanterns and everything. So yeah, there's that.
Okay. And Osborn, you said?
Yes, Osborn. Osborn is what I'm talking about next. A little something different this week. A slightly different book to talk about this week. And this is a good book, too. I've been looking forward to this one. Although the one overriding thing I think that one takes away from this, that given the dude's name is in the title, it's not really a book about Norman Osborn.
Misleading. I want my money back. I didn't buy it. Never mind.
Well, it's not to say it's not about him. It just sort of it's about things around him.
It's about the myth rather than the man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, the plot of this basically is Norman is banged up. Norman is in jail, which is where he should be. And some senators or
mm-hmm. yeah, senators
in general, some top brass guys anyway, meet to discuss what they actually need to do with him. Because it's tough to bring a case like this to court and have it done right. And basically what they conclude is that he needs to be shipped off to the secretest of most secret prisons. This is far from your raft or your cube or whatever. This is where they keep the worst of the worst. They're so worstest that you've never heard of them before.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so that there is somewhere undisclosed location, four of the worst creatures. Who have we got? Kingmaker, who feeds on benign human memories, replacing them with bad, driving his victims to madness. Zerdal, a member of a reptilian alien race who believes human beings there would pose a threat to her species and vows to wipe us out. The Decapitator, a South American chimera god prone to torture and bloodletting. And Julie Covington, a.k.a. the Toxic Doxy, a gifted chemical biologist and geneticist whose experiments resulted in the death of hundreds, possibly thousands, of urban poor. And it seems that we'll probably be getting a short story focusing on one of each of these characters at the end of it. Because this is a $4 book, but there's a backup strip in here as well. It's a backup strip by Warren Ellis as well.
Oh, it was also Carl Reeves, I think. Did you mention Carney Reeves?
Well, he dead, so he don't matter.
Oh, well. Okay.
His is the empty cell that one of the inmates there will not be returning, and Norman is here to fill his cell.
Yes.
Norman appears in it very little. It's actually about the myth and influence of Norman Osborn. It's a lot more than just a little bit of, you know, schedule filling, catching up with Norman in between times. It's got some ties to Amazing Spider-Man as well, though they seem a little bit outdated after Big Time just happened there. What's her name? Nora, I don't remember her surname. That reporter who's worked with Peter before, she needs.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Who you're talking about. Okay.
Ben Urich wants her to do a follow up on Osborn, and she doesn't know where he is or anything, and that so she's because she previously had an involvement with Osborn. She was Norman scared her into keeping quiet in an earlier Amazing Spider-Man storyline, so they're following up on that as well. And
she's one of the others getting her reporter power back to kind of, you know, pursue the stories again. They kind of established that in the Amazing Spider-Man, the new issue, where she's going to do a follow-up, like just like you were talking about, on Osborn.
Well, it's going to be hard to do it with him moved to this secret place. But the other star, if you will, of this issue is Father Coulmier, the priest who comes to visit each of these super criminals, you know, who comes to give them peace and what have you. And I really should have seen it coming, but I didn't see it coming. Whenever he announces that, he gets a phone call saying, it's done. And it turns out that he's been responsible for arranging for Norman's transfer. And he takes his shirt off, and you can see that he has one of those goblin tattoos that are doing the rounds on the back of his neck. And I totally didn't see it coming, but it was. And I was like, oh, shit! When I read it, and I just sort of went aloud. Oh, that's going to be bad, because things are bad. You know, this is not going to go well.
No.
But yeah, so I imagine that subsequent issues will focus more on the man himself, but this one is a lot more about like the myth and legend of Norman Osborn and his influence. There was this bit that made me laugh really hard. It's when the senators are talking about the trial and said, we just want to make sure that nothing is done in haste. Norman Osborn is far too dangerous a man to... And then someone interrupts him and says, on what planet does Norman Osborn stand a chance of walking free? I don't know, at the same planet where he ended up in charge of the Avengers, maybe.
Oh, which is true.
Like, yeah, you know, if that can happen, you really do have to take this. But these guys do not make this decision lightly. This is a bad place that Norman has been sold, and it's a good issue with a strong, like, this is not some little puff project in between times. This is a real strong notion of what it's trying to do here, and I'm really looking forward to seeing more of this. And it's unfortunate then, sort of, that this is drum written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, who is Matt Fraction's other half, and who I've talked about before. I'm not particularly familiar with her work, but I read something of hers in the Heroic Age anthology series, and I just really liked her work, and I thought, hey, I'm going to pick up. Purely, I picked it up on the strength of that, because I just really enjoyed the short story she wrote in it. And it's drawn by Emma Rios, who has previously worked on Mark Waid's Doctor Strange miniseries from a little while back, and I think she did something with Runaways as well, did she, or was that Sarah Pacelli?
I think Runaways sounds right. I don't know.
Well, she's the sort of artist that you would see on Runaways, even if she hasn't, actually. I would like to see her on Runaways if she hasn't worked on Runaways. And then the backup strip is written by Warren Ellis with art by Jamie McKelvey. And it's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pages long.
But it is just 7 pages of awesome.
Yeah, it kind of steals the show, which is, I suppose, not too surprising whenever you're just letting Warren Ellis write a backup strip. But it's basically, from her perspective, the story of how she started doing these horrible biogenetic experiments, which she calls genetic plug-ins, to help improve people's bodies, and how her experiments just continually sank lower and lower into the illegal and the horrible and the inhumane. And I imagine we can probably expect one of these on each of the other. So that's sort of the strange thing, is that whenever you self-title a series Osborn, and even then, if you want to make the series about the impact of the man rather than the man himself, it's a little odd that we suddenly have 4 new characters flung at us. And then go to the lengths of giving them backup strips to even establish their identities. Because it really runs the risk of overshadowing Norman himself. But the way the first issue is set up, that's kind of, they don't overshadow him because he's not in it to be overshadowed. You know, it's about everyone else's reactions to Osborn rather than about Osborn himself. As he says on the first couple pages, he simply watches a spider catch a fly in its web and is impressed by her singularity of purpose. And he says, he just picks up the spider and says, today we learn to wait. So Osborn is taking a far less active hand here, I think, but we'll see where it goes.
I wonder, if he's not going to do some manipulation on these other characters, though. I'm sure that we're going to see... It's kind of like the Silence of the Lambs things, I wonder. You know, if it's like...
Oh, there's a little bit of that, yeah.
Is Norman Bound going to be as deadly, if not more deadly, than Norman Unbound. You know, now we've seen what happens when Norman is in the world and free and loose. Now he's going to be bound and just have really his wit at hand. What is he going to do? And is he going to manipulate these other characters that have been introduced? That's my question.
He seems to be very much in a lucid phase, and that is always when Norman Osborn is at his most dangerous.
But I want to mention one thing on this backup real quick and just say that one of the reasons that I liked this story so well is that I think it was a brilliant self-perspective story of a complete sociopath. It's very rare, I think, that in fiction you can really capture that true essence of what a sociopath's brain acts like.
And yeah, this is, you genuinely feel as you're reading this that she's not really wrong.
Yeah, even though she's horribly wrong.
Oh, she's a monster.
And the way that her brain...
You find yourself getting sucked into her self-delusion.
Yeah, and the way her brain is just thinking and moving through and the sort of conclusions that she makes are absolutely insane. And yet the way it's depicted, yes, you have those moments where you're like, oh, well, that makes sense. Why is that making sense? Because it's completely insane. It shouldn't. But wow. So, yeah, I mean, I wasn't as taken by the main story, maybe because I was expecting more Osborn, but the backup definitely sold it for me because it was very good.
The way you guys are talking about it kind of sounds like I might need to read this.
I would recommend it.
And it's only five, you know, it's a five mini, so, you know, of course, everything at Marvel's a mini now, so.
The minute. Yeah. You know, I'll tell you what, though, speaking of, no, did we talk about it last week, I guess? I don't remember now. March, I don't know, the newest solicitations, there are a lot of, new minis coming out. All new 32-page minis are only $3.
Hey.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, Iron Man is up to $4. And Fantastic Four is at $4 as well, but it's an extra large size issue, so that we'll wait and see if it stays up next month. But I have to give them credit for that, because that is breaking from a very long-standing tradition at this point to bring the price of miniseries down.
Hey, okay, we'll take
we'll see how that goes. I thought we talked about that last week, but I guess not.
Yeah, I don't think we mentioned it. Awesome.
Not really any interesting miniseries out that month, but hey, they're cheap.
Yeah.
Bet it's a lot of Thor.
No, I didn't see any Thor.
No Thor? Wow.
No Thor?
What I should say is that the newly launching 32-page miniseries are $3. Ones that were... But there are like literally half as many $4 books this month as there were the previous month.
Good.
Yeah.
So it's on the downscale. And lastly for me then this week is the graphic novel I was talking about earlier. Carrying on with my plan to talk about a graphic novel of the week. Read this whole book this morning. The Marvelous Land of Oz from Marvel.
Ooh.
Yes. I really can't recommend Marvel's Oz books heartily enough. They're written by Eric Shanoer, who I'm not hugely familiar with, but I know that he is like an established Oz adapter and author. And they are as straight an adaptation of Baum's books as you could possibly want to put into comic book format. This is the second. Yes, there's The Wizard of Oz. There are also 39 other Oz books.
Wow.
Which surprises many people. Baum himself wrote, I believe it was 14 Oz books altogether. And then other writers carried them on afterwards, and there are 40 in the official series. And I don't know how long Marvel thinks that it can carry on doing these, but as long as possible would hopefully be the answer. It's... Well, I collect them in the graphic novel format. The Wizard of Oz was first. That came out last year. This is the second in the series, The Marvelous Land of Oz. It's the only one that doesn't feature Dorothy, but it does have the Scarecrow and the Tin Woodman in it. And it's about a boy named Tip who runs it. You may, if you've seen the Disney movie Return to Oz, mm-hmm. you'll be familiar with elements of this story, because Return to Oz is a combination of the second and third books, The Marvelous Land of Oz and Ozma of Oz, so you'll have seen elements of this story before. But this is about a boy named Tip who runs away from the old witch that raised him, named Mombi, taking with him Jack Pumpkinhead and heading to the Emerald City for no other reason than he might as well go there. But on the way, he discovers that an army composed of entirely female warriors, led by a general named Ginger, is looking to overthrow the Scarecrow and rule the Land of Oz. And the Scarecrow is a pretty apathetic ruler, so this and the Army of Oz is one dude with a beard and a gun that's not loaded. So it proves to be a pretty easy takeover. And then, obviously, they team up with the Tin Woodsman and the Scarecrow, the Sawhorse, the Gump, Jack Pumpkinhead, and H.M. Wogglebug T.E. in order to save the Land of Oz with Glinda the Good Witch's help. I love reading this in graphic novel format because there are no chapter divisions. The way that the individual issues are written is that the next page follows on absolutely and directly. They don't stop at cliffhanger points. They just stop at the end of a scene. There are no chapter divisions or individual issues in this. This is just like a graphic novel version of the book in the purest sense of the word. So that's why I got up early this morning. Well, not that early. But I got up, sat down, and read it. Just straight through, because you can't interrupt this. The house was empty, and that's the way to read this book, just in complete peace. This took me 2 or 3 hours to read, because I get so caught up in the artwork of it. Now, that's not to talk down the quality of the books or anything, because, you know, classics, children, literature, timeless, you know, 20th century children's literature. But if Scotty Young ever stops drawing these, they might as well just jack the whole idea in. Because his art, it's like I was saying about Freddie Prince's, not Freddie Prince, what the hell's his name?
What?
I've already forgotten his name. I always want to call the guy that does Batwoman Freddie Williams.
J.H. Williams?
J.H. Williams, thank you. Freddie Williams is a Flash artist. I always do that. Anyway, his artwork elevates the story, and as far as these Oz books go, that is totally the case. But they're great reading in and of themselves. But the wonderful thing about the artwork is how, you know, there are some pretty universally accepted visions of Oz, and obviously it's the MGM musical is. You know, has so seriously defined what everybody looks and thinks of whenever it comes to Oz. And these designs are so not beholden to it that it's also really refreshing and artistic in that sense. You know, they don't look like he's just drawn the movie characters. And this is genuinely funny as well. Who knew that people knew how to be funny in 1903 or whenever the hell this was written? Who knew that the pun existed back then? You know, I found myself laughing at some genuine points of it. I mean, the whole idea of the female army, it seems to be Baum poking some rather warm-hearted fun at the women's lib.
Yeah, the women's suffrage, probably. Because that was
That is because, you know, they're forced out of the palace. They go and round up their allies, and they come back, and They're all beaten. They don't really have an option. They're surrounded. And then the Scarecrow lets a troop of field mice that have been hiding in his straw out. And all of these women warriors run screaming because girls hate mice. That's the sort of attitude. I mean, they're not actually defeated by that. They just get them out of the palace and they're completely surrounded and they have to retreat. They have to escape again anyway. But, you know, so it seems like it's like casual sexism in that regard, but then actually there's these other parts where it's like where's the quote? We've had a revolution, Your Majesty, as you ought to very well know. Since you went away, the women have been running things to suit themselves. I'm glad you've come back to restore order. Doing housework and minding the children is wearing out every man in the Emerald City. I wonder how the woman managed it so easily. I really don't know. Perhaps women are made of cast iron. It's like women actually are able to do all this really tough stuff without complaining about it. And then, like, whenever everything's saved at the end of the day, what's the quote? The women, tired of eating their husband's cooking, prepared so delicious a feast that harmony was restored to every family. So it's men suck as much as women do. So, genuinely funny, absolutely gorgeous to look at, classic literature, best read in graphic novel format. Really can't recommend the Oz series enough. There's only two of them. Go out and give one of them a try.
Cool.
Nice. And, yeah, this week's graphic novel. I also read Grant Morrison's Marvel Boy this week, but I'll maybe talk about that next time.
Hey, if you want to wait until next time, I've actually got that. Maybe Ooh. I should read that, and then we can talk about it.
Dude, totally. Yeah.
Crazy.
It's like Final Crisis crossed with Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's like in my box of like trades that I got for like $2 a piece or something. It's like, I want to read this. I'll put it in a box somewhere and eventually I read it. I did that 3 years ago and still haven't read it.
Well, bust that out and have a read of it. We'll chat about it next time.
I will make the best effort to do that.
Okay. So that leaves me, correct? You're all good?
Okay. Yeah, I'm good. That's me. That's me for this week.
All right. So let's talk about Green Lantern. We've opened up this week with seemingly a very compassionate EMT trying to help a dude whose guts are falling out, and his partner seems to be more interested in his less hurt patient, but because he has insurance, political reference, he's helping him out. There's a horrible accident, and it seems that our very altruistic friend is about to die. But no, the Indigo tribe shows up, and they decide to give him a gift. The gift of proselyte? Is that how you say that?
Proselyte.
Yeah. I'm not very good at pronunciation. But yes, the entity of compassion. And then we move on. that sort of happens with the big explosion moment. And we move back to where we were last time as Flash, Hal, St. Walker, and the entity-possessed girl who's possessed by Arda are having a philosophical discussion about the ethics. Oh, and Larfleeze is there as well. Ethical discussion about humans taking on entities and everything else that's going on. One thing is Flash makes a point to mention Atrocitus having killed a bus full of inmates. Did that happen in Green Lantern or did that happen in...
That was in Green Lantern. That was last issue.
Okay, it was last issue in Green Lantern. Which you could tell Hal was a bit annoyed, but he wasn't as annoyed as it would seem that he would need to be, which I think really set Barry off. But Hal goes into a whole discussion about what it was like to be Parallax and trying to fix everything on his own. Back home on Oa, they figured out that they're not able to track Hal anymore. And that he's sort of gone semi-AWOL. But no fear.
Think he's up to no good is what they think he's doing.
Yeah, they're not sure what he's doing. But they have sent someone to go after him. They're originally going to send an Alpha Lantern, but they said no. Let's send someone else from Earth. Who could that be? Well, assuming Flash showed up, I'm assuming it's Flash. But there's a lot of talking in this issue. It's really a lot of you know, this philosophical discussion between Barry and Hal talking about, you know, what their mission is and whether the efficacy of the way they're trying to accomplish things, you know, if Hal's really right. And that's broken by a lovely moment when Larfleeze picks the Flash's pocket.
Yeah. That was Barry, awesome. Barry Allen, is that your real name?
Yeah. Brilliant.
I would have thought he had pockets.
Yeah, one, who knew that he had pockets? And two... that he was so engaged that he had no idea that Larfleeze had totally picked his pocket.
I suppose if anybody could find his pocket and do it quietly enough, it would be Larfleeze.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But to break up the discussion again, the Indigo tribe shows up. along with their new possessed human and entity. I'm not really sure why they showed up other than just to help out or say that they were coming to help out. But they show up, of course, Blackhand is with them. And, you know, Barry, again, is a little bit thrown off about Blackhand being here as well. And I think we finally get some insight in this issue into what's going on, at least a little bit, with the Indigo Tribe. Because it apparently their rings suppress their other emotions and only bring out compassion. And it would seem that without the rings, they're all crazy murdering bastards.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yes. So Arda uses her power to like tap into their power, and it's because remember before, I mean, going back into the Blackest Night, when the Indigo Tribe was around, they could enhance, it seemed like they could enhance the other rings' emotional spectrum, but the reality is that they were more tapping into the other rings' emotional powers because the rest of their emotions are being suppressed. So just at the point at which the Indigo Tribe gets really pissed off because they feel sort of violated by this, and there seems to be a showdown of rings between Larfleeze, Hal, and St. Walker, between them and Indigo, a voice comes from the distance, and it's none other than our friendly, weird, maybe deformed, but we don't know who they are, Guardian in tattered robes. Bringing with
I really thought we were going to see the face.
Someday.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be revealed right here. That's what I was thinking.
No, I was hoping. But in tow, he has Parallax.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
A big golden dragon.
Yep. And there's a brief scuffle, and then the last page. I don't think I want to mention the last page.
No,
I will say if...
Cool.
Huh?
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. I don't know that I want to give it away. But I will say that if you do go to read this, please don't thumb this. Do yourself a favor. And
well,
don't do what
I
did
give it away
again.
Either, but I don't want to give it away either, but it seems like what happens on the last page seems to be happening a lot lately.
Yeah. Yeah. That's at least the second or third last page surprise of that variety. We've
yeah.
had in the last couple months
of
Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it's good. And there's a little tease in here for the movie as well. Right after that, a little discussion, a little note from Jeff Johns. Hey, did you know that Jeff Johns won the Spike TV Award for Scream Award for Best Comic Book Writer?
I do, because it says it on the covers of some of the comics. Because
just about every issue...
I wouldn't put that on the cover of a comic, but okay.
Like, thumbs up. I guess that's good. okay. Yeah, they made a big point to mention that. I don't know if that was a Jeff Johns best, or if that was a, you know, higher up a DC thing. But, yeah, I was kind of like, well, that's... That's great. Good job.
Yep.
So, we will now get into the Batman portion of the show as we discuss Batman Inc. Which is, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting out of Batman Inc. I can't say it was this.
Do we want to talk Inc. or do we want to talk about the return first here?
Well, I'm talking Inc. and return is the very end, correct?
Return comes first, and then Ink comes after that.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's do it that way then. Okay, very well. Well, let's talk Return, and then we'll talk Ink at the end. Okay. So, Batman the Return. I don't know.
I was a little like,
he's back.
He's back.
That's why it's called the return.
And
watch out, he's returning.
I don't know. It was kind of there was a lot going on, but I didn't know that I knew a lot of what was going on. I felt like there's this intro story. Well, of course, we have the whole Vision again. Morrison's really caught up in that epiphany, it seems. Morrison's really interested in that, in Bruce's epiphany moment. That moment that he knew or figured out that that was his destiny, that the bat would be his destiny. Because that's, I think I've seen that about four times in the last three or four issues. But we see that moment repeated again. And then there's an introductory kind of fight with, are these terrorist people or who are these people? I don't even know who they are.
I guess that they're probably our next great villains.
Most likely, but we didn't know who they were.
Whatever the great evil force that will be influencing Batman over the course of whatever length of time Morrison has left on the book.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
But of course, Batman, you know, as we kind of hinted at, had been hinted at before, Batman brings a bunch of people together. Now, this includes Batgirl, Oracle, current Batman and Robin, Red Robin, to have a discussion about his plan for the future. One interesting thing I thought was this Oracle setup. It's like she's going to be fully virtual. Web 3.0, or Internet 3.0, as they called it. Whatever that means.
It's something that they're announcing, like Wayne Tech's invented it or something.
Sure.
They invented a new internet. I buy it, okay? It's Grant Morrison. I buy it.
Yeah, okay. Cool. I don't know. I mean, and then there's a whole middle section here where Bruce takes Damian out, and they use these really high-tech cyber suits to... I don't know where they are. I know there's a big dead carcass thing. Probably smells really bad.
Yeah, it says 30 hours later, Yemen. They're in Yemen.
Yeah, so it does seem like there's sort of almost like a terrorist element. But he ends up fighting some really nasty dude in a blood mud bath thing. And it's very dark.
He calls Batman Vampire Man.
Yeah, which is awesome.
That'll be the name of the Yemen Batman that he trains in a few issues.
Yes.
Awesome.
But the big thing in here is, you know, Batman gives Damian some orders, and he goes off and does his own thing. And, you know, after discussion, I think Bruce realizes that he's not going to be able to work with Damian as well as Dick is going to be able to. So he says, you know, basically they're going to be working together. He's going to do his own thing. And, you know, Damian's like, well, yeah, anyway, thanks. When I was off running off doing my own thing, I actually put a tracker. So, screw you.
So, who's this guy that Damian runs into? This guy that's all, you know, funny looking. You know, not the big mutant guy, but the, you know, Batman's fighting the big mutant
guy.
And then
the sand person?
Yeah. Who is this guy?
I don't think we know yet. I think that's the whole...
Everything he says is cryptic. He says, I know you, but that day has yet to come. When it does, you will know me. What the hell?
Is this our precursor to Darkseid then? Is this... Or something else? I don't know. Who knows? I got a feeling this is going to lead to Darkseid coming back eventually, but...
I don't know. I don't know if Darkseid could come back in Batman.
No, I think, like, Darkseid, if he's going to come back, he'll be coming back in, like, something...
I think Morrison is basically done with Darkseid now.
Okay.
I think. Unless
he was to do something separate, like a separate book that's not Batman, you know? Like, if he did, like, another book, you know, I could see him doing something with Darkseid, but I don't think we're going to get him in the whole Batman Inc. thing.
No.
You know?
Well, I think that ultimately, I mean, Morrison had this big idea for a thing called Hyper Crisis. When he started working with DC, and he never got the chance to truly do it, but he took elements of what he would have done and he put them in his JLA run and he put them in his Seven Soldiers, and then it all sort of rolled into Final Crisis, what was left. And the return of Bruce Wayne is essentially the end of all of that. I mean, it is the true end point of this cosmic story he's been telling. You know, we've got the new gods reborn over on Earth Kirby that the next writer can worry about, you know, removed from this universe, put up in a true sort of pedestal on another plane entirely. And then you have that note of finality in the final issue of Return of Bruce Wayne, like where Bruce rings the bell, which is, it's like a metaphor or a resonance or whatever for that note that Superman sang to shatter Darkseid's essence in the final issue of Final Crisis. You know, it's like whenever Bruce is comatose in that issue, like Darkseid and Metron appear to him, and Darkseid makes that one final appeal for him to embrace the finality of it all and embrace anti-life, and Metron tells him how to deny it by, you know, figuring out the first truth that he was never alone, and how that's represented by the bell, and it's that one final ting of the bell that dispels the last vestige of Darkseid, the same way the note did in Final Crisis. I mean, it's stunningly final as far as Morrison's touch on Darkseid goes, I think.
Okay.
But that's nothing to do with Batman.
No. So,
I've just been thinking a lot about Morrison's work the last week or so.
I know, I've got to go back. I really want to read all that stuff. But anyway, there seems to be a brainwashed kid, and they kill their dad, and there's something called Leviathan?
Leviathan, I think, is the Hydra of this role. I think this is the bigger thing that we'll be seeing.
And we see that dude pop up again, you know, weird guy that Damian ran into, who he kind of has bad ears.
A little bit.
You know? When you look at him, he has bad ears.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But Batman says, game on.
Game on.
Anyway, and there's some nice art in the back of this, some, like, some Batman ink, is that going to be logo designs they had on there that they went through, and just some different art and stuff, so that's kind of cool. Script pieces. So.
And Bruce has got his new suit in this. We didn't really mention that too much, so he's wearing
that
new Batman suit.
That's such a known thing.
Yeah, it's not really that big of a deal to me.
He's got a bit of a he's got a few raised seams and a rim around his bat symbol now. That's it.
His gloves are a little more intense.
Glovey? What?
Yeah,
so,
I don't know.
Can't redesign Batman. It doesn't look different.
No, not
so,
really.
So the whole big deal, though, is that like we can tell him and Dick apart now because Dick's got just the bat symbol and he's got the yellow behind his bat symbol.
Yeah.
So Batman A and Batman B, you know.
So that leads into what we will be talking about, I guess, now at the end, which is the Batman Incorporated.
Yeah.
Somebody else want to run?
Dribble it?
Well, I like Batman Inc. a lot. Like, where Batman Return, the Return was kind of straightforward, and it's Grant Morrison, and there are crazy stuff that's going on. Batman Inc., it sort of starts crazy, and that's what I like about it. You know, like, there's this dude, you know, that as far as I know, we haven't met him before. Maybe he was in comics before, but this guy, Mr. Unknown. It just starts up, and it says, "Wake up, Mr. Unknown, open your eyes." And this guy, like, wakes up, and he's just kind of, like, stirring, and he's looking around, and he says, "Where are my hands?" And it shows his hands are melted off. Oh, my God. And there's this dude dressed as a skeleton, and he says, "They are in hell, awaiting the rest of you." Holy hell. This is awesome. And that's what basically the whole book is. It's craziness.
Yep.
But
he's
not
Lord
Deathman. Not like not mind bending craziness, like wacky Silver Age craziness with a bit of with a dark bent.
Yeah, they melted the hands in the Silver Age.
That was kind of a thing about the Return, was David Finch's art was overly dark and gritty for the general tone that I felt was being taken. Because Morrison seems to have really come through the night now at this point.
Yeah.
And seems to be moving to, I mean, it's basically about Batman making other Batman around the world. It's a pretty light concept, you know. And Finch was laying it on pretty dark.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, and like this guy, this Mr. Unknown that we start off with, apparently was one of the guys that Batman was going to meet. He was going to make him be part of this Batman Inc. thing. And we pretty much see that. Look, I mean, it looks like this dude's been murdered. I mean, he's pretty much dead at the beginning of the issue. But it kind of looks like, and I don't know who this guy that's walking in is. I don't know if it's supposed to be his sidekick or
what.
They said
his body double, I think, is what they referred to him as.
But he basically witnesses it, and then the you know, scary skull guy says, "Get him!" And you know, his guys are chasing after him, and this dude's like kicking the crap out of him. You know,
Lord Deathman is his name.
Lord Deathman, yeah, that's his name. God, that's awesome.
Which is so over the top and wacky.
Well, he is a character from Jiro Kato's Bat manga, an actual 1960s Batman manga.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Cool.
Yeah, he's a Japanese version of an older character called, just called Death Man, I think. Yeah, his thing is that he can die and come back.
But I like him. I think he's a keeper. You know?
I think, yeah.
they go chasing after, the guy that walked in, and then we switch focus, back to Bruce Wayne and, what looks like, Catwoman in there. Looks like they're stopping something, some crime or something that's going on. I don't know. The book's kind of crazy.
Well, remember...
There's giant robot rats in it, you know?
I think... Wasn't at the end of the last issue that... Or at the end of... there was a point in Batman the Return where he said that he was going to have to steal something, and he contacted Selina. I think that was in Return... Wasn't it?
Yeah, it seems like she was in the issue. I remember seeing her like on one of the pages, but I can't remember.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's at the very end.
On any one go.
So after he's walking out with after he tells Dick and Damian that they're going to be working together, he says that he's leaving for Japan, and he calls Selina, and you see an image of this Mr. Unknown on the laptop. And he's saying that he's going to have to steal something, so he's going to need her help. So, yeah. So that was teased in Return. There we go. So that's why she's there.
And it looks like, you know, they succeed in getting what they were going after. And it looks like they've still got sort of
after.
A relation. Yeah.
They get what they were going
after. They succeed in getting a little something else as well.
Yeah. I was getting to that. See, it seems like, you know, their relationship's still going on there, you know?
Yeah, he's been dead for a couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, they really hadn't touched on that in a long time. It seems like you know, Batman hasn't, you know, really had Catwoman in the stories and touched on their relationship that they sort of was, you know, teasing a while back.
I mean, they got together in Hush, and I think it's sort of been floating since then.
It's sort of been floating around since then, because I think, like, in Hush, they were trying to say that, was there really a connection between them, or was it something?
She found out his identity then, so.
Yeah.
Didn't she?
Yeah, she did. She found it out in that, and, but you know, whatever, like, Hush was doing to him, you know, making... You know, I can't remember exactly what in the hell happened in Hush, but he did something to him, and they kind of ended it with not sure if there was a connection between them, if it was a real relationship, or if it was just something that Hush did to him to, you know, bring him together. It was, like, all part of his master plan, or Jeff Loeb's master plan, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, so, like, he goes, the issue continues, and I guess he's going after Mr. Unknown to find him, and he finds his dead body, and he finds the Lord Deathman's guys waiting for him, ready to fight, and we just have basically a big old fight sequence that's going on, and... what else happened to this issue? Gosh, I can't even remember. I know I read it.
Tentacles.
Yeah. Well, that's what I love, because there's two jokes that get set up. And, you know, I'm used to the real cerebral Morrison, and this was really awesome because there's two nice setups that led into a really great sort of joke at the end. Because earlier in the issue, I think there was a mention, was it in Return, maybe? When Selina said, well, as long as water's not involved, that she was in. And I think that may have been when they were... It may have been in this issue. She mentions that as long as there's no water involved,
that she was in. And then later, as they're going through, because Mr. Anodin hides out in a toy shop, like that's his, you know, his normal identity is in like a toy and video store, like a comic store, I guess, equivalent. And she picks up a manga of, and is looking at some hentai stuff. And she's talking about how weird it is and doesn't understand it or whatever.
And tentacles, specifically.
the tentacle stuff, specifically. So at the end, Lord Deathman has apparently this sidekick's girlfriend over a trap, and he actually shoots Lord Deathman and throws him out a window.
He'll be fine.
He'll be okay. But the girlfriend is over this trapdoor thing, and he's unwittingly thrown the only guy out of the room that knew how to stop it. And so she plucks down into the water, and Selena makes the comment about water, and that wasn't her intent, but she jumps in after the girl anyway. Lo and behold, not only is it water, but there is also an enormous octopus thing with giant tentacles.
Hell yeah, it's a giant octopus.
It's like,
I don't get too excited. It's taken out the wrong way.
I mean, what's really awesome though is just, I love the end of this issue where the whole thing where, she falls in and then like Catwoman goes after it and it says Lord Deathman lives to take life, and he's only just begun. Can Batman solve the Reaper's riddles, or will curiosity kill the cat?
Very awesome. Kill the cat.
Yes.
Yeah. Totally. What I can't imagine he was going for anything else.
Yeah, it was very.
If every issue
television series.
If every issue of Batman Inc. ends that way, then I will love every issue of Batman Inc.
Yes.
Tune in next month.
Same bad time. Same bad issue. Yeah. So good though. I mean, it's.
It was good. I liked it. I enjoyed it a lot. I'm looking forward to the next issue. Even if it is just Batman jumping around the world and training a new Batman, I don't care.
Yeah, and
if
I think if
they just do this, I'll be happy with it.
I mean, who knows? It's the first issue of whatever it is, so it's hard to say, but that wouldn't surprise me. And I wouldn't mind it. I mean, I like it. So I think it's good. I think we're off to a good start with
My big wonderment, my big question is how long Morrison will be on this now. Because it's pretty uncommon that when Morrison comes in and does a big thing, that he hangs around to do more after he's brought it all to a close. And that is really what he accomplished with Return of Bruce Wayne. It was the end of everything he had been doing on the book. And yet here he still is. So I'm just wondering how much longer he is for the world. But he obviously still has a passel of ideas.
Yeah. Well, so I hope he stays for a while. I hope we get several issues of Batman Inc. out of him. I don't want him to be like gone in like 8 issues or something. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and I mean maybe,
think that the validity of this excessively inflated Batman line of books is tied to how long Morrison will be around.
Yeah.
Because there are a ridiculous number of Batman books out of a month now. I mean, not counting any of the Associated Family books, you've still got 5 Batman books just about the central character. And yes, okay, 3 of them are Dick and 2 of them are Bruce. But
And they're not all that good because, like, also the regular Batman book came out, when I got this one. Read it, and there's a reason why I'm not talking about that issue today.
I mean, but that'll never be cancelled because that's Batman. And Detective Comics will never be cancelled. And Batman and Robin at least has an identity.
Yeah.
Batman and Robin is specifically the Dick and Damien book. There is a reason for it. It exists for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And Batman Inc. is Bruce doing his globetrotting thing. So, I mean, the one I'm really looking at and going, why, is David Finch's Dark Knight, which we're getting this week coming.
Yeah.
And I would say if there's one book that is short for this world, it's probably that one. But it's David Finch, and people are stupid, so people probably buy it like crazy.
Well,
who decided David Finch should get to write a comic?
Well, I do want to read it, though. I am going to pick it up. I'm not just going to it's crap and not read it. I will get the first issue at least. But before we leave Batman Inc., and we pretty much close out, what do you guys think about the art? I really like the art.
Oh, yeah.
I like Yannick Paquette. He's a little heavy on the... I mean, you know, this is something I said earlier this week, and it's like, I'm still puzzled by it even now. Who is picking the artists that have worked with Morrison over the last couple of years? Whatever happened, and this is a generalization, but whatever happened at DC to the idea of the all-star creative team? I mean, Morrison started, and it was Morrison with Andy Kubert, you know, name artist. And then Kubert drew like 4 issues or something.
Sounds like a Kubert.
Yeah. You know? I think he managed. Yeah. And then it's been Tony, who? Daniel, ever since. And then some of the artists who've worked on. I mean, then, you know, Batman and Robin was doing it pretty nicely. I mean, you had Frank Quitely on there. Yeah. But then he's followed up by Billy Tan. Like, Billy, competent artist, but. What's, you know, it's only Billy Tan. And then and it's like Yannick Paquette. How did Yannick Paquette, a heavy cheesecake relatist, a competent but overly cheesecakey artist who was most noted for drawing the issues of Ultimate X-Men whenever it was flagging really badly, wind up co-producing DC's big launch of the second half of the year? Like, I mean, I'm assuming it's because Morrison likes him. I'm assuming that. I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm assuming that's why it is, but it's like, what happened there?
Well, maybe he just wanted somebody. Maybe he wanted somebody different. Maybe he didn't want like a Jim Lee or a big time.
I just wonder what happened to the idea of the all-star creative team. You know, Bendis and Romita Jr. on the Avengers, Brubaker and Diodato. Well,
maybe Hill they don't.
And whoever's free that week to draw the comic.
Maybe what happened is you just don't need that anymore. Maybe you just need it to say Morrison, Bendis, and Miller, and that's it.
You know, that's a good point. Are we getting back into maybe another golden age for writers in comic books rather than artists? I mean, for so long, the artists have been the main point. You know what I mean? It's like finding the good artist, and it's like, oh yeah, and these guys will sort of write it. But I mean, are we starting to see now the focus definitely. Being on the writers and the story and that the
I mean, I think for a long time now we have definitely that the age of the all-star writer has been prevalent for the last couple of years. I'm not specifically singling out writer. I'm not even talking about all-star creative team. Just as far as DC goes, what happened to the idea of the creative team? Nobody's ever on a book for any length of time anymore. Somebody can write it, yeah, but it's just, it really, these days does seem to be a case of whoever was free that weekend to bang out a couple of spare pages. Birds of Prey being the prime offender.
Oh, yeah, and it didn't help
sold
that
on the
series any.
Neil Simone with Ed Benes. He manages to draw 2 issues and then farts out a couple of pages for the subsequent one. And even now, when he's not drawing any of it at all, they still couldn't get one artist to draw the whole of the last 2 issues. Of either one of the last 2 issues.
Yeah.
And I mean, and you look at Straczynski's Spider-Man and Straczynski's Superman or Wonder Woman, drawn by Eddie who? Barrows, and I don't even know who's drawing Wonder Woman. You know, I mean... I don't. And it's just, I mean, certainly, believe me, it's not that I'm opposed to the notion of the lesser known artist getting their chance to shine or anything. But I mean, particularly as far as Superman went, he was drawing Superman before Straczynski came on. I think you could probably have shifted more copies there if you'd actually attached an artist of any great note to it. I mean, Barrows looks nice, but there's nothing landmark about it. Hey, did we look at Superman this week, by the way?
I have it, but I did not read it because, you know what? He's not staying, so maybe I just don't care.
You know? Oh, yeah,
don't waste your time reading it. Preachiest motherfucking comic I have read in years. Oh,
I knew it was going to be preachy just by the cover.
Yeah, as soon as I saw the cover, I was like, oh, never mind.
Jesus.
The little boy with the Superman shirt and what looks like he's been hit, he's got a black eye. I'm expecting it.
Well, here's okay. Well, it is exactly what you think it is. Okay, yeah. Abuse in the home. Okay,
is this his last issue? Is this the last?
No, I imagine he's probably done. Well, no, I don't. You know, I fully don't know. Actually, it might be. I imagine. Well, anyway, this issue. I just have to talk about this for a minute to end the show because fuck. It's exactly what you think it is, first of all. Abuse in the home. Kid loves Superman. Dad doesn't want him having anything to do with Superman. Beats him, beats his mom, throws him in the thing. Throws him in the basement. But Superman, of course, hears, because he's Superman when he has the super ears. And he comes in and he saves them. Hooray, it's over. And now, of course, like, it's not a bad message or anything. And the whole point of Grounded so far has been that the problems Superman is solving are the problems that he should not have to solve. That's the point of the story. They knew those drug labs were there. That woman who was going to jump only needed someone to listen to her. But the Jesus. This issue where he says all it really needed was somebody with a pair of ears or eyes and 10 cents worth of courage to make the phone call, you know. It's the fact that in the second to last panel, as he says this, he actually, I swear to God, turns his head and looks out at the reader.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yes. Sweet Jesus. It's the most ham-fisted, preachiest, clumsiest motherfucking... I take back what I said last week. Get to fuck, Straczynski. If that's all you're going to turn up on Monthly Comics.
So this issue should actually say something like at the top where like it's like a special message or something. You know,
a very
special
issue of Superman.
Yeah.
I mean, that is what Grounded has been. It is a very special story arc, but this was specialer than most. Christ, yeah. I thumbed it at work and tweeted my fury instantly. Oh. Ah!
Yeah, I think we had a discussion on Twitter about it. But yeah, I think comics can have a social message, and I think that they can have a place within social commentary, but not that overt. I mean, seriously. You know what I mean? You just can't do that. That's not the way to really get to an audience.
There's room for it as an idea, but it's just... So...
When they announced JMS, this is not at all what we wanted from JMS on Superman.
There is a rather interesting subplot in there, though, where Superman has a wee sleep, and he has a nightmare about some kind of monster fighting it, and when he wakes up, he's all beaten and bloodied as if he'd really fought the creature.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. That's kind of interesting.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Oh. Okay. So there you go. That's the show.
Yeah. So we'll end that with that.
Thanks for bringing us down there.
So we went from the awesome that is Batman Inc. to this crappy special message, Superman.
To a sub-note about why Superman is crappy. But hey, the good news is JMS is going to be gone. So
bye-bye.
So don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out.
Yeah.
So anyway, hey, that's our show. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff still going on. I think we still have a contest going on over at RFC, TFRadio.
This is the last week for that, isn't it?
I think so. And you can win a Fanboy versus.
Oh, wait,
Clock.
No, sorry. That's something else entirely. That's over on New Soundwave. I'm getting my podcasts mixed up, aren't I?
No, it'll be... Yeah, there is the contest at New Soundwave where you retweet when they post, which is on...
It was Super Street Fighter 4.
Thursdays. Yes, for Xbox.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We need to have some sort of contest on here.
We will.
We
I'm going to go ahead... I have the contest in mind. I think I know what I'm going to do for it. I just have to get the logistics figured out. But we will have a contest and a prize, and it should be fun and interesting. I think it'll be right up your alley, McFeely. I think you'll I think you'll appreciate how we're going to go about this contest. So, but anyway, and I do want to make one note and say that while I'm thinking about it, to say that hey. We've kind of mentioned it before, but please support your local comic shops. You know, make sure that you're going down and checking them out. A lot of times they'll have discounts for stuff. So I want to mention my shop, which is New World Comics. They've been there a long time. But if you're in the Oklahoma City area, and maybe one of you are, You should go down and check them out if you're not already buying your comics from there. The guy that runs it, his name is Buck. Super cool guy. Always talks to you. Knows everybody by name. Knew me by my name by the, I think, the second week I was there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, usually we'll hand you your comics as you're walking in the door. So,
sweet.
Yeah, he is super awesome, super cool. But I just wanted to mention that real quick, and it seemed like there was one. Oh, he gave me a free issue of She-Hulk's. So that was
yeah.
Hey, good.
So that was really awesome. But anyway, so do that. Check out contests, tfradio.net/contests. There is the contest going on over there. Lots of cool stuff. One of the prizes is Fanboy versus Clock. So
it's an awesome clock. Everybody should want it.
Man, the way you emphasized that sentence made it was like Fanboy versus Clock, the immortal struggle.
Yes.
How true that is. If only. Hey, we're coming in just under 2 hours for the show, so let's get out of here while we can. So anyway, please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Chris McFeely, Chris Triplett, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2010 Radio Free Cybertron.